Welcome to the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. My name is Paul and I am your host. It's 2023 and we are back with some new episodes. And today I am really excited to dive into this interview with Sherilyn Orr. She is a wife, a mother, a teacher, and now an author of a couple of interesting resources. One is called The Stoplight Approach, and the other is basically a book form of The Stoplight Approach called Signals. And we're going to link to both of these resources in the show notes for the episode. But what it has to deal with is brain science behind parenting your children. And so I think what you're going to find as a parent listening to this today, you're going to find this very helpful in understanding why does your child do some of the things they do and why don't they do some of the things you'd like them to do? Those frustrations that we come into as parenting. Some of the reasons behind this are very natural and very biological. So I think you'll find this a very helpful resource as you're going through the parenting journey with your children. So let's jump into our interview with Sherilyn Orr on the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. Welcome, Sherilyn. Thanks for coming and being part of the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. We have had a variety of guests over our 16 previous episodes talking about different topics. This is unique in that we are kind of jumping into a topic that we touched on a little bit with our Next Gen discussion a while back. But this, I think, is really important with the material that you've developed. So as we begin, why don't you just tell us a little bit of your background?
My background, I am an educator. I'm a mom of many children. I have had 3 biological, 4 adoptive,
wow,
and different foster children who've lived in our house at different spaces and times.
And you live internationally, right?
Yes, I'm located in Athens, Greece, but we previously lived in Uganda, mm-hmm, Africa for a number of years. So I have had a lot of international experience.
And what type of work did you do over the years as you were living internationally?
I've been involved very much in the world of children's ministries, mm-hmm, from being a children's pastor to working as an educator, working as a university college professor, teaching courses on children at risk, working with refugees, mm-hmm, children in the slums, international schools, early childhood education.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about the concepts of what you've called the stoplight approach and how it's kind of been refined into this book called Signals. And for our listeners, we'll link to all the information about this stuff in the show notes where you'll be able to just click and go straight to Amazon and buy the book or check out the material. But is this kind of an idea you came up with one day while you were sitting having your coffee, or is this something that kind of was born out of necessity, or did it have any interaction with your family life in the genesis of it?
Yes, definitely. I hit the wall, as I would say. I didn't know what to do. My home had become quite chaotic. Mm. I felt very sometimes powerless and helpless in the whole parenting realm. And I stopped and I looked at myself and I said, how could me, having a master's degree, being somebody that educates other people in how to look after children, and I'm not cutting it. I'm not being able to do it. All my tools that I had from behavior management, being a special needs teacher, they weren't quite good enough. They weren't working, mm-hmm, for me. And so I really hit a wall in my parenting.
Well, now that I'm thinking that is a common refrain, and even as you're saying that, there may be somebody listening to this as they're driving to work or on the treadmill, and they feel that kinship with you, even with the phrase of hitting a wall. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What does that look like? Is that just a cliche that you use to say you're having a tough time, or what did the wall look like?
I think we all have a dream of this nice, peaceful home where, mm-hmm, kids are getting along and they follow your rules and they listen and they obey. And I felt like for some of my years, that was what I was able to do. And behavior management worked well for me, you know. But then I had this child that didn't care about my rules, mm, anymore. And she didn't care about my rules. She didn't care about obeying them or working hard. And it didn't matter what strategy I used, whether it was time out or taking away a privilege. It didn't matter anything I did. Mm. It didn't mean anything. And it didn't stop or I felt like it actually escalated the issues,
okay,
into these screaming fits. And, mm-hmm, I felt sometimes powerless and helpless. And here I am, an educator mm-hmm. with a master's degree, and I can't control my child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there's that sense of wanting to control
sure.
your family, your kids, and having everything work the way that you want it to work.
Sure.
And I did. If I gave rewards out, they had very minimal impact, and I had to keep giving more and more, and it had to be immediate, and it had to be grandiose, but it still didn't really have any real impact,
mm-hmm.
except for sometimes on the immediate level for a few minutes. And what I wanted to get done, like get out the door, get the kids to school on time, you
know.
Not
too much to ask for.
Yeah, like it wasn't even a big thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I think everything was spiraling. And I felt like my house felt chaotic. There was lots of screaming in it, temper tantrums, and just defiance and disrespect.
Yeah. And so the reason I wanted to dig a little deeper in your story there, Sherilyn, is because I think that dream of the perfect home with the perfectly quiet and obedient children that do their schoolwork on time and eat everything that's on their plate and go to bed at the right time. And all these things are a little bit more of the thing that is not something we can achieve, right? In reality, our lives on a scale are all interacting with that chaos from time to time. And our capacity to deal with that chaos sometimes affects the final product and what goes on in the home. So now I appreciate you sharing that story because I feel like it helps kind of put some skin on these concepts when this is something that's not just, even though we are going to talk a lot about science, we aren't talking about something that's a theory or a concept. We're talking about something that will actually work in the real world. So this is great. The concepts now of the stoplight approach, this is part of the material that you've developed with a team and you're implementing this. And it's great to see this being used from what I could gather from looking it up online and the material you gave me. It's being used across the world to help students and help parents. Why don't you talk a little bit about the stoplight approach and give our listeners a thumbnail sketch of these concepts?
I would like to take a step back mm-hmm. and explain where this all shifted for me.
Okay. Yeah.
How did I go from that chaotic home to a home with a completely different approach?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were traveling across Canada, and we had 7 children, and I was at a friend's house, and my child had a meltdown. And I'm not just talking a little meltdown, and she had these
wow.
often and frequently.
Okay.
And it could take me up to an hour to regroup this child.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but my friend said to me, she's a consultant, and she said, here, let me work with your child for a minute. And she got down on her hands and knees, and she was just really, really calm. And then a couple minutes later, she started to engage with my child and connect with her about something completely different. And within a few minutes, she had my child sitting back on her chair doing what she was supposed
wow.
to do. And I went, wow.
I just said, wow, you must have been really well.
I was really well, especially, I mean, if you think of my background, and I worked with troubled kids, mm-hmm. and what did she do mm-hmm. that I was not doing, and mm-hmm. what did she know that I don't know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the psychology books, child development books, everything else, like what was she doing different? And after she got the child settled doing what she's supposed to, she said, it's brain science. I went, what?
Mm.
And she said, your brain is like a stoplight. And she just drew this 3 little circles, red, yellow, and green.
Mm-hmm.
And she just explained to me so briefly. And it sent me on a journey
sure.
to understand that there is something more out there that I did not understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it also set me on a journey that I started to realize that there's a God that created our brain, and he responds to me the same way.
Mm, wow. That's a great story and kind of explains maybe a bit of the spark to the fire of this concept. Why don't you lead us through some of that red, yellow, and green discussion of and explain what this looks like in the real world?
Well, I think when she wrote those circles out, she said, you know, like if you are in that fight, flight, freeze mode, mm-hmm. in that it's you're functioning out of what we call your brain stem, that lower part of your brain. And you are all about, it's all about you. You don't care about anybody else because you are in that fear brain state. Mm-hmm. This is all about self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
How do I preserve myself? And it's like, you know, there's dangers. You feel threatened. by whatever is around. So there's always three responses. If somebody comes in a room and they've got a gun, what do you do? You either jump out the window, you hide underneath the table, or you pick something up to clobber the guy, right? There's three responses, that fight, flight, or freeze, because your brain feels threatened. And that's what happens with each of us when we go into that brain state. It might not be a gun that's being held to us, but our brain feels threatened. So this is a physiological response to when we feel fear. And we feel powerless, we feel helpless, we feel overwhelmed, and we feel a sense of loss of control. So that's the mother screaming at her kid is because she is feeling powerless, or the child screaming at the mom. And you're only using approximately 50% of your IQ when you are in that fight, flight, or freeze mode. And then there's that kind of middle part of your brain, and that's your emotional brain, that's your limbic system. That's when you're stressed, worried, tired, anxious, a little fearful, you know, hungry, hangry. So that's that warning part of the brain. That's that yellow brain. Be careful, be careful, be careful, because you can flip to red very easily, but also it's that warning sign that says, how do I get back to green? And when you're in that green brain state, that's your upper part of your brain, that's your neocortex, that's when you can do problem solving. This is the only part of your brain that you can have empathy for somebody else. You can make somebody else feel seen, heard, and valued. And when we look at this, the brain states, we know that in order for somebody to come out of red brain, as I would call it, in that, that brainstem, they need to feel safe. As long as somebody's holding a gun to them, they're going to stay in that brain state. So they need that calming space. They need somebody to speak red brain to them. Just be that, be there. Say very, very little when somebody, because their brain cannot process any information when you're in that red brain. It sounds like meh, 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 is when somebody's talking to somebody who's in red brain. So they need to feel safe to come out of that red brain state. And when they're in that yellow brain, they feel they're anxious, they're scared, they're, you know, when they're in that space, they need to feel valued. They need to feel seen, heard, and valued. They need to, as somebody who's looking at their unmet needs, their unsolved problems, their lacking skills, they need somebody to come alongside them and help them to be able to move to that green brain state.
So we're talking about this generally in relationship to parenting children. And yet as we're saying this, it's like, I'm in red brain. There's times where I feel, or I realize, maybe looking back on a bad interaction or something, it's because I was in red brain. Yellow brain, I can think of times even in the past 4 months of maybe stressful times at work where I felt like I've been in yellow brain, and definitely some times where I've been in green brain. But so this is not just obviously a concept that's applicable only to children. We're applying it to children for the purposes of helping parents. Is that, am I correct there?
Yes. As I say, if you want that green home, you want where people are working together and getting along, the stoplight starts with you. You're not going to have a green home unless you are in green. It's those mirroring neurons. Look in the mirror. Whatever face that you have looking in that mirror, if it's a happy face, then that's what you're going to bring bring to the family. You know, they often say, if mommy's not happy, nobody's happy. And we see that true with our kids. When they flip to red, suddenly we go to red too. So how do we stay in green when there's red all around us?
But, okay, answer that. Give me the magic pill. How do I stay? Or what are there some tips? Like, okay, so as the adult, if we're the adult in the room, if we want to set the tone, set the pace here, we do want to stay in green brain when our child is in red. What are some tips for the parent listening to this in the car who's like, this is what happened last night at supper, or this is what happened when we tried to go out for dinner to a restaurant and it was just madness. Help us understand, what are some tips where we can stay in green brain?
Well, I think, first of all, it's actually coming up with some of those while you're in green brain, when you're not in the in the chaotic situation. It's, we often call it the creating your green plan. So that you know, you know, when we think of when there's a fire at a high school, you know, and there's 4,000 kids, how can they empty that high school in 4 minutes of 4,000 young people? How do they get them all out? Well, because there was a plan in place. And, you know, they practiced the plan when everybody was in that green space. They didn't practice it when the threat was there, when there was fire coming out. They practiced it when everybody was in that green. So when your brain goes to red, you can only really do that rote memory. You can't do critical thinking when you're in that brain state. So what have you already practiced and you already know, what am I supposed to do? So that can be things like... create a gap. So often we want to respond instantly to that misbehavior. But if you can create space between you and your child for those few minutes, obviously if you've got a two-year-old, you're not going to leave them unattended. But if you've got an older child, you can say, I'm going to the bathroom right now. And so that's why your green plan is going to be uniquely yours. Because your situation is different than anybody else's. And so that's why you need to come up with what works for me, what helps me. But creating a gap helps me to be able to respond rather than react to the situation. And creating a gap helps me just get a drink of water, take those deep breaths, get oxygen to my brain, and be able to approach the situation. The stoplight is about your approach. That's why we call it the stoplight approach. So I'm approaching the situation, understanding that my child may be in one of these brain states. And my goal is to get them back to green so that I can train them. Because the Bible says, train up a child in the way they should go. So, you know, that is so important, because as we understand brain states, we understand that it takes about 12 to 15 times to teach anybody in green a new skill. Okay, if you want to learn a new skill that's developmentally appropriate, then it'll take probably 12 to 15 times. And then if you want to teach that same person, the same child, that skill, and he's in that red brain state, it's going to take you 350 to 400 times because you're going to only be able to teach it through rote learning. There's no critical thinking involved, because that's the wrong brain state. The brain cannot do critical thinking when he's in that brain state. So as a parent, you hear parents say, I told that kid 100 times not to do that. I often think, well, you probably haven't got to 350. And there's no critical thinking involved in this.
And then probably even more harder to do that in red brain, exponentially harder, right?
Well, you have two people using 50% of their IQ. What do you have when two people are in red brain? You have crash. You have just that chaotic element between two people, and there's nothing good that comes out of two people in red. And as an adult, we have to realize that if I'm in red and I'm dysregulated, I cannot regulate another person who's dysregulated. So I have to be in that green brain space. So I think finding ways, you know, it could be going for a walk, you know, dumping that baby in that stroller and just walking for the next hour, give them a bottle and just go for a walk. Or if your kids are older, it might be going to have a shower for a few minutes. Say, I'm having a shower. I'll discuss this with you when my shower's done.
Is it too far of a stretch to say that if a child is in red brain and we're asking them to do something, it might actually literally be impossible? Like with, like, this is not something that is a very possible in green brain is impossible in red brain.
Your brain has shut down. So your parent who's trying to get their kid to do homework and it ends up being this massive fight. If you can recognize what brain state the child is in, then you can maybe say, shift the situation and say, okay, everybody, let's jump up. We're going to run down the street outside and we're going to run back and we're going to get something to eat and we're going to sit back down and look at our homework again, because then we're changing the brain. And if we laugh with our kids, I think we forget to have fun with our kids just to bring that sense of humor into life, because when you're laughing and you're connecting, then your brain automatically goes up to green. And then if we can find a new way to help teach our kids something rather than you have to get this done right now, otherwise you've lost TV privilege, you've lost this, you've lost this. You're just shutting your kid's brain down, so then it almost becomes impossible for them to do it.
You know, I think we need to also remind people that are listening, this is not a way to label your child, right? This is a state that your child enters into that we're trying to move them towards green brain, right? We want to move them towards that ideal state where they feel safe and loved and valued, and their actions and their activities will kind of come in line with that, or come in line with what we want or what they want. But this is not a way to label kids. A kid isn't a red brain child all the time. they may be in a red brain state. And I believe some of the material I read about the stoplight approaches, this is especially helpful for children who've experienced trauma, and red brain world has been kind of thrust on them maybe by the choices of other people. And so this is not a way to label a child, but this is a way to recognize a state that a child is in. Do you want to speak to that?
Well, I think one of the things that I think we need to keep in mind that this is the MRIs that we have right now, that this is brain science, right? Mm-hmm. That we didn't have this information before. Mm-hmm. And now we have this through MRI. So we can actually look at a brain of a child who's been raised in red, in mm-hmm. a red environment. Their brain is actually physically different than a child who's been raised in a very green brain home situation where they feel safe and secure mm-hmm. with parents who unconditionally love them. And a child who hasn't had that, who felt very unsafe and have experienced that trauma after trauma after trauma, their brain is physically different. But I want to give everybody a sense of hope mm-hmm. because brain science has shown us that we can build new neural pathways in mm-hmm. our child's brain. So it's not hopeless. That's what sure. gives me hope every day when I wake mm-hmm. up, and I've got foster children or adoptive kids that have come mm-hmm. out of very, very hard places, is that sometimes I'm not going to be maybe able to make those instant fix, but I can help to create the right environment for that child to have new neural pathways that will grow in their brain so that they can feel seen, heard, and valued. They can feel safe, mm-hmm. and then you can get them to the point where you can actually teach them.
Let's stop it right there. Thanks to Sherilyn for getting us started in this discussion, talking about brain science and our children, helping us feel empowered as parents. And I hope that you really do feel empowered as you hear this. It can help apply directly to the day-to-day life that you're living and how you're parenting your children. I want to give a big thanks to Grant McAllister, our sound designer, who writes the jingle at the beginning and the end and takes out all the ums and ahs and makes this sound great. And also a reminder to you, if you could rate and review this podcast on the podcast app that you're consuming this on, it really helps people connect with the content. We'll see you again next month on the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast.